You're listening to the Red Diamond Courier, an Elder Scrolls podcast. Here are your hosts, Bob Chichinski and Dog Bark 24.
Welcome everyone to episode 131 of the Red Diamond Courier. I am here with you, as always, Bob Chichinski, with my good friend Dog Bark 24. My dude, how are you doing this fine week?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. Excited to be here because it is finally release day for us, for console players, for the Scions of Athelia DLC dungeon pack. We are up in the dungeons, fam. We ran them today. It's been awesome. I actually really like both of them. We could get into that in a different episode because we got a bunch of patch notes for you, as always. But yeah, it's release day. I put on Twitter, the dark days are over. We are finally are once again the same as PC. So this, I believe, is the last of our patch notes extravaganza for you guys. It's a lot. It's going to be the combat and, you know, class changes and stuff like that. So big episode, important episode, lots to talk about. So we're going to get right into it. And the first thing we're going to do is start off with scores because, you know, here they are. And we've done three episodes now in like 10 days. There's not a lot of news. You guys know what's going on. So let's get right into it. Leaderboards of Grey Host on PCNA. What, and 5 days left for all campaigns for the Grey Host. EP in the lead. You're looking at 79K. They're starting to, you know, kind of differentiate themselves from the pack. DC at 75K and AD at 72K. So not a really strong lead for EP, but, you know, it's coming down to it, and it's looking like they're going to end up with a dub there. For EU, you've got AD in the lead with 91K. They're pushing up towards 100. That's a high score. EP at 68K, and DC bringing up the caboose at 53K. So hopefully, dog, things are looking better for DC over on Xbox.
Well, they're definitely looking better on Xbox. We have Xbox NA, DC in the lead with 82.7K, EP in second with 72.7K, a whole 10K behind him, and then AD in last with 61K. And then for the Xbox EU side of things, we have another DC in the lead with 87K, EP like 15K behind with 68K, and AD in last with 52K.
All right, so yeah, definitely going better for us over there. So make sure you guys go get up into Grey Host or the 30-day campaign of your choice. Get up to at least reward, campaign reward tier 1. So you get your 50 transmutes, do it on as many characters as you can. You got a few days left by the time this episode airs. So yeah. Now, before we get into this massive extravaganza of patch notes, and I know you guys are like, man, how much more could there be? Well, there is plenty more. So we're just going to get this right out of the way real quick. Remind you guys we're part of the Robots Radio Podcast Network and coerce you into checking out robotsradio.net because you will absolutely love the podcast that we share the network with. So go check it out. Stop, you know, after this episode. Okay. And then stop what you're doing and go check it out.
Hey, I'm Tom.
And I'm Stuart.
And we're from the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast.
We talk about all things connected to D&D lore.
And we're on the Robots Radio Network. So if you're into Dungeons & Dragons or you're into lore, then come check us out. You can find us on any podcatcher, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, wherever you get podcasts.
Roll more dice.
That's the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast.
All right, Dogathan. So let's get into this big, 22 pages of patch notes we have.
Yep, it's a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot. So, I guess, this is a long letter they posted.
Yep.
Should we go back and forth maybe on like different bullets?
Yeah, that sounds good with me.
Okay, well, I'll start then. So, greetings. And this is the combat update letter posted on the notes from the devs. Greetings. The 10th anniversary of The Elder Scrolls Online begins next month, and it will surely be a celebration to remember. With it, the combat team has been working diligently at preparing the game for scrying, and this update holds a few of the meatier adjustments and balancing to prepare for that system. Traditionally, the first update of the year focuses on targeting larger systems within combat itself, as well as more in-depth reworks of or addition to existing abilities, item sets, etc. This will be seen as well. Granted, they might not rock the boat as much as other years, since after 10 years, the boat is pretty huge.
Our goals this update focus mainly on the following: improving the experience of status effects, making damage shields slightly more interactive with the major minor system, improving taunt's visibility and readability, targeting some underloved playstyles and abilities to shake up with shakeups to their functionality and visuals. Status effects were our main priority, as almost all of them have received new additional functionality changes to help them feel more diverse from one another. For example, Poisoned has been adjusted to deal execute scaling damage, while Concussed deals bonus damage to recently affected targets. Please see a doctor if you experience repeated concussions. In addition, all of the direct damage status effects, Sundered, Overcharged, Concussed, Chill, and Disease, have received significant damage increases to help them compare better to their overtime counterparts.
Of course, with the adjustment to status effects comes plenty of knock-on effects, so we have other changes to abilities, passives, and item sets in tandem. Damage shields now will interact with major and minor vitality and defile to make building around them or countering them more available. Taunt will now display how many times the target has recently been taunted in the buff tray. Taunt immunity now displays unique visual effects to help improve clarity and understanding. And taunt immunity is both harder to experience and less devastating, but you still don't want to have it happen.
Moving on, our primary focus for class adjustments this update was on the Sorcerer class, where we've seen a sizable amount of feedback over the years on how the class feels significantly weaker when not using pets, as well as lacking many support options for group interaction. To remedy this, we've reworked a handful of morphs, passives, and tweaked a few numbers on abilities. And Case has received numerous improvements to make it more universally applicable. Restraining Prison has been reworked to Vibrant Shroud and is now an area of effect burst heal ability that also enfeebles enemies, while Daedric Minefield is now Daedric Refuge, which grants you and allies a damage shield when walking over its area. In addition to these bigger reworks, the Expert Summoner passive now offers a dynamic for both pet builds and non-pet builds. Make sure to read more in the Sorcerer section to see all the specific adjustments, which we're going to go over.
We've also made a big change to one of the more polarizing Necromancer abilities, Blast Bones. Both Blast Bones and Stalking Blast Bones have been overhauled and renamed to Sacrificial Bones and Gravelord's Sacrifice, respectively. Both versions now summon a skeleton that will sacrifice themselves to the caster to enhance your necromantic abilities and damage over time effects for a duration, with Gravelord's sacrifice increasing the duration and allowing you to cast a corpse-consuming ability on yourself. We specifically did this to help reduce the intense demand and complex rotation requirement of the class, as Blastbone demands an activation once every 3 seconds minimum, making it very difficult to maximize and play around. For those who do enjoy the class's current flow, however, we've made sure to leave Blighted Blastbones as its original form, albeit slightly cheaper to cast, so you continue summoning skeletons hellbent on blowing your foes to the hereafter. So, okay. When you morph it, then you still have the option. Okay, I'm not going to get into this. We can get into it later. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. While the above-listed changes were our main focus, you can still expect to see additional balance tweaks, bug fixes, and other miscellaneous adjustments along the way. So please make sure to check out the rest of the patch notes below. May your journeys lead you to Warm Sands. We hope to see you in Tamriel.
All right, well, that was a wallop of words.
Yeah, it was. Big wall of words.
Is this letter still going?
No, that's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so, we could break this letter down, but let's just, you know, I feel like the patch notes will kind of do that themselves. So, as you guys could see, there are going to be a pretty good amount of changes as they were talking about. So we're going to keep plowing right through them. So they made additional back-end adjustments to Taunt, as they were saying, to improve its readability in combat while making it harder to enter Taunt immunity. When you taunt an enemy, an additional debuff will now appear to show how many times a target has been taunted by another source, rather than being hidden. Note that taunt only generates a stack beyond one stack when a target who is not the original taunt applier uses the taunt on an enemy. So if you're the tank and just casting taunt over and over, you're not going to see a stack. But when other people are, you will see it. So they reduce the duration of taunt's stack counter to 7 seconds, down from 12, so they fall off sooner between multiple casters. Taunt immunity now lasts 4 or 7 seconds rather than 12.3 seconds, so it now aligns with the duration of the stat counter. You can use it as a reference of how long a target will be taunt immune. Taunt immunity now actively flushes previous taunts from the debuff tray rather than appearing to retain them. Taunt immunity now plays very distinct visual effects and displays an additional icon to denote when a target has become taunt immune. Note that targets are naturally immune to taunt from their own effects and mechanics will not display this. And they do have a slight dev comment on this that reads, "We're continuing to try and aid visibility and understanding for one of the most hidden but important mechanics for tanks to know by adding additional player visible fields with taunt, so you don't need to rely on add-ons to see important behaviors." And that's always for the better. I mean, it sounds kind of like interesting changes to me. I kind of am going to have to really pay a bit more attention to see them in action. But I did tank the new dungeons when we did them today, and I didn't really feel anything like too different.
I definitely saw the taunt immunity thing.
Oh,
not
really?
Immunity, but I saw like the little taunt countdown. So I also have like, I also saw like whenever you taunt and all that stuff, because I play with, you know, see all the debuffs. So.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, interesting stuff. I like when they're just tinkered at stuff to make it better, you know?
Yeah. All right. Item traits are up next. They change charged around. They reduce this trait's increase to applying status effects to 235%, down from 365%, to make up for the large increase in performance of most status effects. And that's actually pretty reasonable because I was using Wall of Elements today and it was actually setting people off balance. So normally it's like, oh, you have to wait 5 seconds for it to actually do something. But nah, it was almost instant every time, which is nice.
Yeah, that's nice.
They've also made several adjustments to status effects to ensure that they are closer in power to one another. Rather than clearly favoring damage over time status effects like burning, poisoned, and hemorrhaged. While these effects will likely still remain stronger in terms of total damage production, we've significantly increased the damage that other status effects deal on their application while also adding more flavor to differentiate each effect. Burning. Reduce the damage to the status effect by 6%. This value was used as the standard of power for all other status effects. Chill increased the damage by 106%. Concuss increased the damage by 106%. This effect now deals an additional 15% damage to targets that have recently been concussed. This operates the same way the Wall of Elements conditional effects do. Disease increased the damage by 88%. This effect now deals additional damage in 6-meter radius around the target, applying minor defile to all enemies nearby up to once every 4 seconds. Hemorrhaging. Reduce the damage of this status effect by 20% per tick at base. This effect now stacks up to 3 times, increasing its damage by 25% per stack. This will result in about 25% damage increase when at maximum stacks when compared to before. While dealing less damage if you cannot consistently keep the stacks active. As such, this damage now updates dynamically per tick. This status effect no longer applies minor mangle. Overcharge increases damage by 106%. This effect now instantly restores 65 Manchika to its activator. Poisoned reduces this damage of this status effect by 30%. Reduce the duration to 4 seconds, down from 6. This damage is now considered execute damage and deals up to 100% bonus damage to targets under 100% health. As such, this damage now updates dynamically per tick.
Wait, poison is now going to deal execute damage? That's kind of sexy.
Yeah, so, you know, poison inject is even stronger now.
Oh, right? Boy. And,
Sundered, increase the damage of this status effect by 106%. This effect now also grants you 100 weapon and spell damage for 4 seconds. And then there's also a dev comment on here, and it reads, "For too long have the status effects of burning, poisoned, and hemorrhaging reigned supreme over their direct damage cousins. In efforts to both align the power of status effects and improve the flavor each of them provides, we've done a large pass of their values and functionality in hopes that the systems becomes more impactful for builds that use damage types outside of flame, poison, or bleed." Honestly, I didn't realize that there's been more stuff than like flame, poison, and bleed for like more than a couple years. So
yeah.
Like, I feel like they added a bunch of these status effects more recently than others, but okay.
It does just feel like there is a crazy amount of them now, but I don't know.
Yeah. The dev comment continues with, "Over time, status effects now have minor differences that give each of them a purpose and edge. Flame damage is a staple standard that offers consistent damage. Poison shines in and execute phases, while bleeds shine when constantly applied and maintained. Direct damage status effects now deal much more damage than before. Granted, they will still deal less overall damage per application, as they offer other effects as well. To make up for the lack in total damage, we're also adding more utility to these effects to help facilitate that each damage type focuses on. We've opted to not enhance Chill's additional effects as it already has a unique functionality for those frosty ones out there." Whew. That was a lot for item traits.
Yeah, for real. And then it looks like we've got even some more kind of debuffs and buff stuff coming up here. So for major and minor vitality, they updated these buffs to increase heal. Was there anything you wanted to say about these traits or anything?
No, not really. I mean,
okay, for sure. Like, I don't know. It's a lot of words that I feel are like not too much changed.
Yeah, pretty much they're just doing more.
Like, yeah,
they matter now instead of being like, oh, okay, I don't really care about this. So,
right. Okay, so for major and minor vitality, they updated these buffs to increase healing received and damage shield strength by 6 to 12%, rather than increasing healing received by 8 or 16%. And there's a dev comment here that reads, "We're opening vitality to influence damage shield effectiveness in hopes to differentiate the buff types more from mending, as well as making damage shields less binary in their performance. As such, we've slightly lowered the potency of the buff to make up for the fact that it can double up in many cases." Okay, so, yeah. It does a little bit less, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And it now influences damage shields, so that's interesting. Major and minor defile updated these buffs to decrease healing received and damage shield strength by 6 to 12%, rather than decreasing healing received and health recovery by 6 to 18%. So now you lose the health recovery, but debuff, but you impact their shield strength instead. So the dev comment reads, "Similar to Vitality, we're adjusting this debuff to ensure there is a negative version to the buffs that damage shields are getting. Additionally, we're removing the health recovery penalty from the debuffs, as Battle Spirit already applies a healthy reduction to that stat. We're cautiously bringing the values on Defile down to match Vitality, since the effect will be more generally useful. But we'll keep an eye on how this interacts as a whole with Battle Spirit." So those are some interesting changes. And I like that they're kind of giving you a bit of a way to mess with shields a little bit. We'll see how that works. And one more thing before we get into class changes. They also fixed an issue where abilities that offered a passive slot bonus that persisted through bar swap could become lost if you had them on both bars and then removed one. So, yeah, that's some, you know, kind of annoying little back-end stuff that may plague you and you might not have even noticed, but now it won't. So, there you go.
Yeah, correct. Especially if you use Oaken Soul or you're a werewolf. But if you're a werewolf, you're probably doing fine anyways.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we got some class changes next. You know, I'm the Arcanist and Necromancer guy, so I'll start us off. And Arcanist, you know, bow your heads all together because, yes, our beam was nerfed. Judging by the way one of our friends was doing damage today with his Arcanist, I don't think it was that bad, but I mean, they did reduce Fate Carver's damage done and by this ability and its morphs by 7% per tick. Pragmatic Fate Carver, they reduced the potency of the damage shield by 16%, and they fixed an issue where the shield did not have a max health limit like other shields. The shield is now limited to 50% of your max health. So, yeah, that morph is just like, oof, hit hard. Now that the this is the dev comment on it. Now that the Arcanist has been out for over half of a year, we're utilizing a lot of the data we're seeing to make cautious adjustments to the class. Our goals here are to slightly peel back the ease of damage production the class has, in hopes to incentivize slightly more complex rotations to regain the damage. while simultaneously cleaning up some morph power disparity and oversight, with Pragmatic being a little too defensively powerful and not following typical damage shield behaviors. So yeah, I mean, it's nothing like too crazy. Probably not really groundbreaking or game breaking. But yeah, you know, you might feel the difference in all honesty. It's just kind of part of it. So the next one that they touched up is Psychic Lesion. They reduced this passive's increase to applying status effects to 55%, down from 75%, to make up for the status effect buffs in this update. And the last thing they touched on the Arcanist, so really not too many changes. The Imperfect Ring. So they increased the radius of this ability and the Fulminating Room morph to 6 meters up from 5 to better match their visual effects. The rune break synergy from all versions of this ability is now also 6 meters up from 5. And the Rune of Displacement morph, they increased the radius of this morph to 10 meters up from 8 to better match its visual effects. So when you put it down, it kind of looks like it goes, and it used to not. So now, no matter what, even at the edge of it, you're going to be getting, you know, everything you want out of it. So it's not going to be, you know, visually breaking, because it looks like you're that, you know, you're in it and you're not. So yeah, Arcanist, not too bad, not too bad. What about Dragon Knights, dog?
That's a good question. Let's see what's going on with Dragon Knights. So first off, they did they messed with combustion a bit. This passive now increases your damage done with burning and poison by 20 and 40%, up from 16 and 33%. And this passive now grants 1,000 magicka and stamina whenever you apply burning or poison, rather than granting magicka for burning and stamina for poison. And there's a dev comment on here, and it reads, "This passive has been reinforcing some restrictive morph engagement with Dragon Knights who are trying to effectively use it to its full power. Depending on your build type, you'd always need to find ways to find what damage type your build has less of through other morphs, enchantments, or item sets to ensure both parts of the passive proc'd reliably. The passive should now be much simpler to understand and utilize and impose less restrictions, while also being less demanding on server performance." Well, that's good. It'll also be nicer for, you know, tanks that get 1,000 magicka and stamina, because you probably apply burning a lot, especially if you use talents.
Which they're all using talents.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Especially my tank in PvP.
Of course.
All right. We also have Engulfing Flames. This morph's flame damage is taken debuff, now scales off the highest of your offensive stats, rather than addition of your weapon and spell damage. This will make the maximum value harder to reach for non-damage dealers overall, while remaining relatively unchanged for most damage-oriented builds. So I guess just a slight little change there. But that's okay. Nothing too groundbreaking for the Dragon Knight, though.
Well, that's, you know, that's good. Dragon Knights, I feel like they got a lot last year of touches here and there, so I just give them a bit of a break, you know.
For sure, for sure.
All right, so we have now the Necromancer changes, which I know. Pains to the hearts for all us necromancers, because things are changing, like it or not. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. We hinted at it earlier, but Blast Bones has been reworked. This ability and the stalking Blast Bones morph was renamed the Sacrificial Bones. This ability and the stalking Blast Bones morph, which has also been renamed, now summon a skeleton that, after their formation delay, jumps to their owner to infuse them with power for 10 seconds, increasing your damage done with class abilities and damage over time effects by 15%. These abilities no longer require a target to activate, but instead require you to be in combat. Now, the Stalking Blastbones morph in particular was renamed to Gravelord Sacrifice, and the morph extends the duration of the bonus to 20 seconds and causes your Flame Skull and morph's third cast to deal their damage in an area around the initial target and creates a corpse at their location. Now, there is a known issue with this, and it's that Sacrificial Blastbones and the Gravelord Sacrifice morph may still report their original names for combat logging events and API. The damage increase for damage over time effects may not reflect properly on tooltips, but should still apply to the actual damage, SCT, and logging. Now, the Blighted Blastbones morph also got a little bit of a touch. This morph's overall functionality remains the same, to retain a way for the original playstyle of the skill to be kept. They did reduce the base cost of this morph to 1836, down from 2295, so it is easier for non-stamina focused builds to sustain. Wow, well, that's me. This morph now always applies the disease status effect. So the dev comment says, "We're finally taking a stab at adjusting this ability to help necromancers who don't want to constantly manage a short duration ability, as it put a significant demand on creating complex and dynamic rotations in real combat. The reworked version should feel relatively similar to the end result of the damaging original ability, where you can frequently create a high damaging area effect attack roughly on the same 3 second cadence of before, but with more interaction in the Necromancer's base kit, allowing you to feel less like you're focused on managing pets and more like having your pets focus on enhancing you. We'll be closely monitoring the engagement of these two versions of the ability over the next year, and we'll tweak and fine-tune the newer experience if necessary. In this pass, we're also trying to ensure there's a way to continue playing the way many necromancers have become accustomed to, with a high skill mastery and robust rotation. So we're making sure one of the morphs is left alone, while making it slightly less cost-heavy, so it remains accessible to most build types." So, there's a couple more little things on the Necromancer, and then I'll go into my thoughts overall. So, Death Knell, which is a passive, they increase the passive's critical chance to 10% per ability slotted, while meeting its conditions, up from 8%. And the Animate Blastbones morph, this morph now only spawns Blighted Blastbones rather than spawning the version of the ability you've morphed, as there is little benefit from having multiple skeletons activate from Sacrificial Bones or Gravelord Sacrifice. So, not too much to the Necromancer, just one main huge change on a big ability. Personally, like, I do get it. Like, when I play my Necromancer, I'm like, oh my gosh, man, it's like Blastbones. But I feel like every class has, you know, that ability. So I do think it's really cool that they chose to give an option. You know, the one morph will do one thing, give you buffs, give you an opportunity to use different abilities, while still, you know, maintaining that inherent class identity. And the other morph, you know, it stays the same. It costs a bit less even, so it just gives a better overall sustain for your rotation. Plus, If you know, if that's the style you want to play and you want to keep playing it like I do, because it's just what I'm used to, then it didn't mess with it, you know. So I'm actually interested in trying the other version, seeing what kind of builds people come out with that, with the different buffs. But yeah, I mean, overall, I'm not too freaked out. I think I'm going to have to just keep probably plowing ahead, enjoying my Necromancer. I might even have to check that new morph out. I don't know. What do you think, Dog? I mean, it's pretty interesting change they had.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. You know, I have that Bob Chichinsky Necromancer, and I don't know, I haven't really touched it at all. So I don't even know which morph. I would assume it. I have like the new morph instead, but I don't actually know. So it's definitely going to be weird if I go into a dungeon, because I don't really know what I'm doing on my character anyways. And now it's going to be like, I don't even know what that button does now. I don't know what my other buttons do, but yeah.
Well, it sounds like a personal problem, not a necromancer problem, but you know.
Oh, sure. Yeah, and it's 100% a personal problem. I agree, yeah.
But yes, I feel you. So not too bad for the necromancers. So let's hear about some of these other classes, Dog. What do we got next?
All right, we have everybody's most hated class, the Nightblade. We have Incapitating Strike. Increase the damage done of the enhanced version of this ultimate by 10%, and extended the duration of its effects to 12 seconds, up from 8. This ultimate no longer grants Reeve for slotting. And there's a dev comment, and it reads, to help differentiate the morphs more, we're moving away from them both granting a passive and active effect, and instead splitting them up. Soul Harvest will now focus on more of its passive effect of printing ultimate in high kill count situations, while Incap doubles down on saving up extra ultimate for devastating bonuses in the moment of its cast. And, you know, I still think Incapitating Strike should have a 3-strikes rule, you know. You use your Incap on the same person 3 times in a row, it should just automatically kill you. Like,
that... I don't know about that, man. Maybe it should automatically kill you, the person they're casting it on.
No. Okay, if you're a Nightblade and you need to incap the same person 3 times and they don't die after the 3rd incap, and then, you know, you might as well just give up. But they don't give up, so at least this would be like an automatically, yeah, no, you go home now. Like, you get to go home and get to think about what you've done, because you're bad. I think Graham would agree with this, you know.
Yes. I'm sure all you Nightblade haters would.
All right, we also have a couple more Nightblade changes with the Soul Harvest morph. This morph's slotted bonus now persists through bar swap. So cool little buff there. Concealed Weapon morph. This morph now deals 10% increased damage at all times and deals an additional 10% damage for 15 seconds after leaving stealth or invisibility, rather than granting Major Berserk. This morph's minor expedition and conditional requirement also now persists through bar swap.
Ooh, minor expedition. Aw, yeah.
And there's a dev comment on here, and that reads, based on much of the feedback we've seen with this morph's many iterations, we're moving forward with a bonus that focuses on the ability itself to ensure it offers a stark and effective bonus, rather than a complicated bonus that makes the ability feel more like a management skill. Simultaneously, this will let us reevaluate other parts of the Nightblade kit in the future to find healthier spots to bring them up in PvE damage production without further complicating some of their PvP strengths. Like Cloak. Yeah, and Incap Strike, you know. 4 times in a row without them dying.
Okay, dude. 3, 4, you know. Dog,
you like baseball, so right? Like, this should be more up your alley, you know, 3 strikes and you're out, right?
And maybe you should have killed them before they could incap you 3 times.
Well, you know, I could if your cloak, you know, was more like Shriek, but.
All right, Doc. So what about what about the next skill?
The next one, all right, we have the Debilitate Morph. This morph now increases the chance of applying the Overcharge status effect by 15%, rather than guaranteeing its application in each tick. Now that Overcharge does considerably more damage, note this 15% is its base chance of applying status effects and will be increased by amplification such as charge trait or elemental force.
Okay, I like that.
All right, next up we have Siphoning Strikes. Rework this ability and its morphs to be simpler to use while making their resource recovery more engaging. When activated, the ability will instantly drain 4,000 health to restore 2,000 magicka and stamina. When the ability is slotted on either bar, any damage you deal will heal you for 1250 health up to once every second. Then we have the Leeching Strikes morph. This morph now increases the passive healing done to 1800 health. Whenever the heal activates, it reduces the cost of your next Leeching Strikes cast by 10%, stacking up to 10 times. The cost reduction lasts until you consume, your character dies, or you rezone. Then we have Siphoning Attacks morph. And this morph now increases the resources restored to 2600 magicka and stamina. Whenever the heal activates, it also restores 200 magicka and stamina. And there's a dev comment on this one, and this one reads, the Nightblade class has long been limited in its overall performance by how well the player can utilize light and heavy attacks between each ability, making it very difficult for many players and build types. In efforts to ease back some of this demand, we're moving forward with the rework of their primary sustain tool to be more usable by any build or player. Rather than needing to constantly activate the ability to be eligible to heal when you properly weave, it now passively heals you anytime that you do damage, simply for having it slotted. The resource portion of this ability is now granted at the base level of the skill rather than morphs, and no longer grants exclusive resources, but comes at a risky cost of health, which we hope the passive healing helps lessen the risk of engaging with. Additionally, the morphs now focus on the different aspects of the skill, where Leeching Strikes focuses on raw healing and reducing the risks of activation, while Siphoning Attacks doubles down on resource recovery by adding a passive recovery option and increases the rewards of its activation.
That's actually a pretty awesome change. I think a lot of Nightblades will like that.
Yeah, I think I'll like that for my Magblade. I feel like I use that, but then again, I don't know what any of my skills are called. No, I use Swallow Soul. That's my spammable.
Yeah, it's not a spammable. It's the one that you put on, and then every time you light attack, you get like magic back.
I probably don't use that then, because I'm always out of magicka. But now I should use this. So.
Nah, yeah, this is going to be a good change. Nightblade really got some good changes here, and looks like Magic Nightblade is going to be pretty sexy to play, honestly.
Yeah, I agree.
The mistake I made was wanting to do Arcanist and Necromancer and letting you talk about Nightblade, someone who hates them so much, but that's okay.
No, I just hate fighting against Nightblades, all right? Unless it's the bombers. I like fighting against bombers because I can usually point them out, and then I make fun of the people that die, or I get angry at the people that die because then they kill me because they don't know how to block. Or they're running Gaze of Sithis because, you know, people like that, like Bob.
That's right, brother.
Yeah. You're just, you know, bomber bait. That's how you are.
You know, everyone... It wasn't meta until I started running it, so it is what it is. Alright, yep, so...
Bomber bait.
Whatever, dude. I survived. We're gonna move on to our next class, the Sorcerer. So, first thing we got touched up, and they got just about as much touched up as the Nightblade, if not more. So the first thing that got touched up for them is the Encase skill. This ability and its morphs now apply Major Maim to enemies for 10 seconds. In addition to attempting to immobilize them for 4 seconds, rather than only immobilizing enemies for 4 seconds and refunding Magicka if it failed to do so. They also reduced the base cost to 4,050, down from 4,320. Note that the Major Maim does not require the target to be immobilized to apply. So, a little bit complicated, but it basically stayed the same and just also slaps on Major Maim. The Restraining Prison Morph of Encase. They renamed this morph to Vibrant Shroud. This ability now heals allies in the area with the same healing potency of Blessing of Protection, rather than attempting to immobilize enemies. This morph will continue to apply Major Maim to enemies in the area for 10 seconds and will also apply Minor Vitality to allies who were healed by the ability for 10 seconds. But they increased the cost of this one from 40 to 4860, up from 4050. So that's actually kind of a significant increase. But you won't have to cast it as much as if you were, you know, just spamming Encase and Ruin Prison. So yeah. Pretty interesting stuff there. And of course they have a dev comment on it. And it reads, "We've gone back and made Encase a vastly more usable tool with less restrictions of where it can be used, similar to Aspect of Terror's adjustments from previous updates. In addition to this, we've corrected many of the shortcomings of the morphs by ensuring Shattering could be used more as a damage ability or area effect situations for AoE situations, while focusing on enabling more support behavior for sorcerers with a new Vibrant Shroud rework." That's a mouthful.
It is, yeah.
But, unfortunately, all of the sorcerer changes are, so we'll kind of keep going. The next one they touched up, Conjured Ward. This ability and the Hardened Ward morph will now heal you for 15% of your max health or Magicka, whichever is higher, if no pets were shielded by the abilities. So, this is a very situational and technical skill, but let's read on. Regenerative Ward. This morph now also heals you for 10% of your max health or Magicka, regardless of if a pet was affected by the shield or not. So the dev comment for Regenerative Ward reads, "In efforts to aid lone wolf sorcerers, we're adding a conditional bonus on this ability that makes up for the power loss it receives when you don't have pets with you, while also trying to make up for some loss in not running their primary burst heal with the Summon Twilight. We're also improving Regenerative Ward's bonuses in hope it gets more engagement by making the heal a guarantee, but with a reduction in healing, so it doesn't come overshadow, or it doesn't overshadow Hardened Ward." Okay, so we have a couple more skills for you guys here on the Sorcerer. Daedric Minefield. They renamed this morph to Daedric Refuge. The mines the ability place are now wards that activate when you or an ally walk over them, granting them a damage shield for 6 seconds. Rather than activating to deal damage and immobilizing when an enemy walks over them. Allies cannot be affected by one of the wards more than once every 2 seconds to prevent situations where a singular ally could take multiple shields immediately. The shield uses the higher of your max Magicka or stamina and is capped at 43% of the target's max health. And the dev comment on this reads, We're adjusting this morph to be a completely new unique functionality to help sorcerers function more in the support role and gain access to more non-pet related defensive tools. We targeted this morph to rework as the engagement between the original morphs heavily favored Daedric Tomb, and this morph naturally allows for a higher target count. Where support abilities shine most in. And then we have just a little bit more for the sorcerer here. So the expert summoner skill. This passive now increases your max health by 5 to 10% while you have a summoned pet of any kind, up from 4 to 8% when you have a Daedric summoning ability active. So that's nice. The passive now also increases your max magicka and stamina by 5 to 10% while you do not have a summon pet of any kind. And the dev comment reads that we're splitting this passive out to be more adaptive to the difficult build types we see sorcerer players engage with. Much feedback over the years has noted that playing the class without pets can often feel very limiting and less powerful overall. So we're attempting to add small bonuses for those lone wolf sorcerers out there. Which, once again, I don't think we need more lone wolf sorcerers. But, regardless, Lightning Splash also did get touched a bit. They increased the radius size of this ability and its morphs by an additional 2 meters, as they were significantly smaller than the other class-based area effect damage over time abilities. So the last one, Lightning Splash, they increase the radius size of this ability and its morphs by an additional 2 meters, as they were significantly smaller than the other class-based area effect damage over time abilities, with no real power justification for doing so. So that is a crazy amount of stuff on the sorcerer. I mean, I like some of the stuff they did, especially with, Conjured Ward. The Encase morphs and changes are pretty interesting. Expert Summoner buff is very awesome. Lots of good stuff, though, I would say, overall.
Yeah, I would agree with that assessment. All right, next up, we have the Templar class, and this one actually isn't very much. We just have the Power of Light morph. And this morph now always applies the Sundered status effect when it deals damage, both the initial and explosion. Rather than applying a unique 10-second form of Minor Breach, as Sundered will cover Minor Breach for a duration between. Note, this does mean Minor Breach can fall off for a very short period of time if this is your only source of triggering the effect. So I would probably say that's like a slight little nerf there for the Stamplar. But it is what it is. It's alright. Yep. And then our last class is the Warden. We have Glacial Presence up first. Reduce the potency of this passive by about 50% as the Chilled status effect received a huge increase. Overall, this will result in about a 6% damage increase between both these changes. We have the Sleet Storm ult, specifically the Northern Storm morph. The increase of damage done by this morph by 50%. Activating the ultimate now grants 50 weapon and spell damage for 5 seconds each tick, up to a maximum of 9 times for 450 weapon and spell damage total, rather than increasing your weapon and spell damage by 300 for 30 seconds. Note, the duration refreshes each stack like all base stack-based effects do. And there's a dev comment on here, and it says, "We're shifting the focus and strength of this ultimate into something that feels more appropriate for the Masters over Bitter Cold, as its previous iteration was relatively passive and underwhelming. Now the ultimate power offers more impact in the moments of its activation, with a power ramping effect to help add extra satisfaction and damage to your burst moments. Which is interesting. Personally, I always use the Permafrost morph, which is also got a little touch up here. And they reduce the damage done by this morph by about 32% to make up the adjustments to Chilled and Glacial Presence. Overall, this will result in ever so slight, less than 1% damage increase of this morph. So, yeah. So, Warden really just got the ult changed around a bit. That's about it. That wraps up our class changes.
And a lot of class changes it was.
Indeed.
Alright, so we don't have as much left for you guys, but there's still some more. Don't worry. So we got some weapon skill line stuff coming out here. The bow, the focused aim morph. This morph now always applies the centered status effect rather than a unique form of minor breach for 10 seconds. For dual wield, Lacerate, the ultimate, and its morphs now also apply the hemorrhaging status effect each tick. That's nice. For two-handed, the executioner morph, this morph now deals bleed damage rather than physical damage. This was done to help additional sources of the damage type enter the game, to help balance out ways to apply status effects. We'll see how that goes. And then for the vampire skill line, Viscerate, the ability and its morphs will now also apply the hemorrhaging status effect. And for werewolf, Pounce, this ability and its morphs initial hit will now always apply the hemorrhaging status effect. So there you go. Hemorrhage them up.
I see what you did there. I like it.
I try.
All right, next up, we're moving over to the guild changes. And first off, we have the Fighter's Guild. We have Barb Trap. This morph now increases the damage done of the initial hit by 20%, and the initial hit now always applies the hemorrhaging status effect, rather than increasing the chances of the applying the status the effect by 10 times. And then there's a dev comment, and it reads, since we've significantly buffed hemorrhaging in instances where when you can keep up the effect, we're toning down this morph's ability to passively keep it active. Now the initial hit will help jumpstart your stacks, but you'll need to find additional sources of bleed damage to keep up the pressure. So interesting little change there. I think it's a pretty good change overall for that one, but. Alright, then we have the Undaunted skill line, and this is going to be Inner Fire and its morphs, but starting with Inner Fire, they reduce the cost of this ability and the Inner Rage morph to 1620, down from 2700. They reduce the damage of this ability and the Inner Rage morph by 10%, and adjusted their damage type to flame damage rather than magic damage. They fixed an issue where activating these abilities would not cause you to face your target, which also fixed an issue where these abilities could frequently cancel light attack inputs. And then lastly, the radiant synergy from all these abilities is now guaranteed, rather than having a 50% chance to apply from some, and the synergy no longer has the minimum range of 12 meters to activate. So you can activate it pretty much wherever now, instead of having to be really far away, which is good. Alright, then we have the Inner Beast morph. They increase the damage of this morph by 80%, making it equal to ranged spammable attacks. And this morph now applies minor vulnerability and minor maim to the target rather than a unique damage taken from the caster debuff. This one's a bit weird because I'm not really sure why you would want to be spamming taunt on something, but, you know, that's just weird. We also have the Inner Rage morph, and this morph now allows up to 3 allies to activate the Radiant Synergy, rather than causing it to be guaranteed, since it's now always guaranteed. And there's a dev comment, and it reads, we're cleaning up this ability and its morphs to fit better into the roles and usability. by removing some of their older gameplay behaviors with random chances. While we're not opposed to random chance, we believe that a role that focuses on bringing stability should offer benefits that are inducive to that nature. In addition to this, we're cleaning up some behavior we've seen with Inner Beasts, where sometimes damage dealers are taking the morph to increase their overall DPS and causing some conflict in group content with actual tanks. Inner Beast is intended for tanks that don't want to sacrifice too much damage so they can play more like a bruiser, so we're shifting the damage bonus of this damage ability. This will allow those builds to treat this as their spammable and their taunt, rather than creating a worse situation where the ability can also be used to buff your overall damage. So yeah, Inner Beast got nerfed to the ground for pretty much no reason. If your group doesn't have a way to get minor vulnerability, then I guess it's useful. But that's like, you don't have a warden or... trying to think what else, but warden's really the main thing that comes into mind where they have the easy access to minor vulnerability. It's also harder to yell at fake tank. It's also harder to yell at fake tanks for not using Inner Beast now, especially if they use, oh, I guess right here, Teleport Strike, Nightblade, Swarm. What is Swarm? Warden, I was just talking about Swarm. Ruin of Eldritch Horror, which is Arcanist, Agony Totem, that's Necromancer, or use Shock Damage to get the Concuss status effect. So those are all different ways to get minor vulnerability. So that's, you know, that doesn't really provide much group damage output help. Yeah. And, you know, my little kind of comment here is, you know, destroying a morph because Billy was using it in Veteran Trials is kind of stupid. I mean, all of the new Arcanist players use Runic Jolt or a morph in dungeons, and that skill and morphs still apply taunt on everything. So you get some guy who's level 10 playing his little Arcanist, and he's just spamming that skill because that's what, you know, new players tend to do. They spam whatever skill that they start off with, which of course is that skill, and yeah, that's more problematic than, you know, getting Undaunted to Undaunted level 4, morphing it into Inner Beasts just so Billy can go be a menace in Veteran Trials. You know, those are two different problems. So yeah, I definitely feel like, you know, fixing the Arcanist taunt should take more of a priority of over Billy, but you know, Billy is just a menace, so guess we gotta nerf Billy and the actual, you know, bruiser tanks that, you know, use it for just, you know, increasing their damage and being a, you know, a bruiser tank. But I digress, kind of. All right, Bob, do you want to start us off with set changes?
You know what, actually, I know you've been dying to talk about Tormentor, so why don't you just go ahead?
All right, if you insist. All right, so we have Tormentor for set changes. This set now only taunts the first enemy hit by the ability that activates the set, rather than taunting any and all enemies hit by the ability. Due to this change, this set can now trigger off of blinks such as Shriek. This set now also heals for 45% of all damage done from the ability that activates this set. And there's a dev comment, and it reads, "This set has flown under the radar at allowing an area of effect application of taunt for quite some time. But like all things in life, it must come to an end, where this is a very old functionality of the item set. Area of effect damaging movement abilities were spread few and far between during its introduction into the game, so its AoE taunt capabilities went effectively unnoticed. Over time, however, we've added significantly more of these ability types and this over time however we've added significantly more of these ability types and this item set has enabled behavior that goes against one of our core philosophies for tanking, where tanking should be an individual action meant for one specific target in the moment of activation. To prevent a complete loss to this set, It now works with blinks, and we added a new healing functionality to help ensure chaining activating this ability still provides something fun and impactful. And you know, sorry to be the bringer of bad news, but this set is DOA, you know, dead on arrival. This has been a set that I've been meaning to put together for both my Stamblade and Samplar, which is, you know, a bruiser tank, for normal dungeons, but just haven't really gotten around to it. And now there's simply no need, because turns out the only reason why you're using an AoE attack to taunt things is, you know, so things actually attack you, so things don't, you know, chase off. The cool thing about Tormentor is that if you're feeling lazy, you're actually hurting your team, because this was not meta. And the other cool thing is that if you charge in with Stampede or Explosive Charge, the enemies are forced to respond logically and attack the guy right in front of you instead of doing massive damage. The other cool thing is that if you charge in with Stampede or Explosive Charge, the enemies are forced to respond logically and attack the guy right in front of them while doing massive damage too, instead of Bob, who's falling asleep two rooms back. But, you know, who knows, maybe enemies will now target the main threat and not poor sleepy Bob. But we, after doing the dungeons, found out that that is not the case. They'll still target whoever they seem, you know, unfit, I guess, because they still don't target, you know, the guy spamming a jabs at them. And they go for the guy in the back.
Yeah, that's, you know, how it goes.
But yeah, I think it's, you know, pretty safe to say that my Bruiser Templar tank is officially dead this patch, because Inner Beast is changed and is no longer super effective, and well, Tormentor, which is, I think, you know, really meant for Bruiser tanks, is also gone too. So just major changes going on.
Yeah. So to wrap up a little bit of the side stuff, just a little bit here at the end, they also fixed an issue where many sets created an area of effects that did not obey line of sight. This affects the following: Azure Blight Reaper, Deadlands Assassin, Defending Warrior, Destructive Mage, Explosive Rebuke, Grothdar, Ice Furnace, Marsalok, Phoenix, Unfathomable Darkness, Venom's Smite, and Vicious Death. So, yeah. You know what? No more line of sighting with those sets, because they weren't supposed to do it right anyway.
Next up, we have Stinging Slashes. This set's damage bonus now scales off 20.925% of the higher of your weapon or spell damage, rather than offering a flat bonus based on the item level up to 1635. This will result in a damage loss for most builds that are currently engaging with this set. And there's a dev comment, and it reads, "We're adjusting the set to no longer grant a flat damage increase for anyone using it, to one that is meant to shine for damage-oriented builds. This should significantly lower the pressure and kill potential the set is enabling for tankier builds in PvP, while retaining its potency for those who focus on damage over survivability." So I think a good little change there, you know?
Yeah, I like that one, actually. I don't know who thinks of them, but I'm glad they do.
Yeah.
So, Unleash Terror, they also reduced the damage of this set by around 7% to make up for the buffs to hemorrhaging status effect. Overall, this will result in a 2% damage increase of the set. So, once again, more damage. I like that.
And then lastly, we have Mantle of Sororia. This set's perfected version now grants 129 weapon and spell damage rather than 1096 match magicka. So it now offers all the weapon and spell damage.
Well, how about that, man? Changing the perfected buff of a side of a set. That's pretty cool. Yeah. I don't know if I've seen them do that before, but I'm happy about it.
So that wraps up the patch notes, though, you know. A lot of changes. Some good. Some bad. some definitely interesting. You know, could go either way. It just depends on, you know, your play style or, you know, actually trying out the new changes. So.
Yeah. It's a lot of changes, but surprisingly, none of them were too game breaking in a bad direction. Maybe it's their 10-year anniversary gift to us. I don't know.
I feel like a 10-year anniversary gift would, for some people, would be, you know, a real proper AoE taunt, but I think after reading, you know, that Tormentor change, that they're not going to do that ever. So.
Well, you don't need it, dog. You should try tanking once and you'll understand.
I mean, I just want enemies to fight me and not, you know, the random DPS sitting in a corner, sniping in the corner. You know, it,
like, so pull them into you.
There's I'm options, jabbing everybody on top.
There's options.
Yeah.
All right, though, man. Right. I'm sure everyone else is just as done hearing our voices as we are. So, thank you guys for hanging out, man. I know that was a wild, long haul of episodes. It was for us too. Days of trying to get lined up. We didn't get them out as fast as we wanted to, but we got them all freaking out. It's still in release week for console. And we hope you guys are really enjoying it. We really have liked the dungeons. And we're having a lot of fun in update 41. So, anyways, we're going to wrap it up here in the Red Diamond Courier Shop. Dogged, where can these people find us if they still want to hear more from us?
All right. You can find us on our X or Twitter of the @RedDiamondCast. You can find us on ESO PC or Xbox Guild of Heirs of the Red Diamond, which you can join on the Robots Radio Discord found at robotsradio.net.
And if you check our show notes, you'll find all the good things, links to our sponsors, friends, music producers, things like ESO-Hub.com, who rep us through their Dwemer Automaton app on Discord. Go check it all out, please, please, please. And leave us a review if you can, because we'll shout it to the stars, if it's 5-star. So, Dogged, what about you, my man?
You can find me on Xbox, X, Twitter, ESOPC, all of @DogBark24.
And for me, it's going to be about the same. All Bob_Chachinski on all your favorite things. So, guys, come hang out with us. Come play some ESO. Let's do some new dungeons. Let's play some with these new classes. Let's get some new sets. Let's do all the stuff, man. Very exciting. New crank rates just dropped. We'll talk to you about those, you know. New Jester's Festival, anniversary events coming. So, yeah, very exciting stuff, guys. Thank you for sticking with us through all these patch notes. Once again, hope you guys are enjoying the heck out of Update 41. And we will catch you on the flip.
Yep, see ya.
Listening to a Robots Radio podcast. Smart shows for interesting people. Check out all the shows at robotsradio.net.
Ahoy there, ye landlubbers. Avast, my name is Captain Logan, and I'll be your guide out on the Sea of Thieves. If you love the idea of stealing treasure, cutting down cursed skeletons, fighting off krakens, and raiding forts filled to the brim with shinies, then Sea of Thieves is the game for you. Join me each week as I dive into the news and bring back the nuggets of information that any sailor worth their weight in salt would desire. You don't have to be a pirate legend to gain access to my podcast. Just search for Keelhauled, a Sea of Thieves podcast in your podcast app of choice, or head over to robotsradio.net or captainlogan.podbeam.com and get ready to set sail for adventure. Arrgh.